Hello everyone, welcome to Ich bin ein Hamburger on FSK 93.0. Here today we have co-burgers. Can I call us co-burgers?
Yes.
We're co-burgers.
We're co-inhabiting this bun.
We're coagulated colleague burgers.
Yes.
Shervin McComma Pervin.
Mick.
And
punked.
Susan, comma. Just Susan.
Just
no,
Susan.
No commas necessary.
Susan, just Susan.
And I'm Clappy, comma, McStool. Alright, yes. So firstly, as usual, going around, what kind of burgers are you guys feeling like today?
Do you want to start?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I already thought about it. I have it in my mind. So, you know, like when you go to a fancy restaurant and it's like you get like a deconstructed burger that you have to assemble yourself. Like they just give you a whole head of romaine lettuce.
To make it fancier,
yeah. Yeah, but it's like I feel like so much has happened and it's just like so, like, you know, like between the election and like the second wave, I feel like I just have to pick up all the pieces and put myself back together and just like reconstitute myself into something that will be able to ride out, you know, the rough couple of months ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I feel like, you know, between COVID and you know, the cold weather and like the stress of traveling back to the US, I'm just going to be like, I'm going to get a beat down by those three. It's going to be bad. But you know what? I'm doing okay. I'm gonna ride it out. Just gotta get my shit together. So yeah.
Work out how to construct it.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't fall apart.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So your deconstructed burger.
Yeah.
She's got all the burger cards on the table, and she's got a.
You got the ingredients.
Yeah, she's got the ingredients, but she doesn't know how to construct it.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
And you. Shoving kind of burger.
What kind of burger am I? I'm a deep fried burger because I'm fucking thrown right now into the fucking
deep
fryer. I'm fucking chucked, like thrown down there and like fucking kept. And it's like, hey, we should find
out.
Hey,
we can use this
out.
For that.
Yeah. Yeah, deep fried. I'm getting fried left and right. And yeah, it's delightful.
Okay.
It's really quite delightful. It's okay. When I come out, I'll be charred, crisp, and inedible. But
crunchy
it's okay.
On the outside.
Crunch on the outside, crunch on the inside.
Okay.
You should probably throw that burger away, but it's okay.
But it's painful being fried.
It is not an enjoyable experience, I can tell you that. But I, as I said before, quote unquote, am feeling it. I am feeling it.
You're feeling the deep frying.
If you need it to be explained, then you are not feeling it, but you are there almost.
Surely this has been tried at some point, a deep fried burger.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Someone getting a hamburger and putting it in a deep fryer.
I mean, you
can
deep fry a boot and eat it. That's what they say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that. You could throw anything in a deep fryer, like you said.
Especially if you beer batter it first. Ooh, man. Heart disease. Just like delicious.
Probably won't be delicious, though.
I would eat it.
Yeah.
Just because deep fried don't mean it's delicious.
No.
That's
okay.
Okay,
if you take out the lettuce. If you get the lettuce and the tomatoes out, I think it'd be okay. Because I feel like the I mean, you can't really go wrong with, like, the patty and the buns. I feel like that'll be okay. I've had a deep-fried Twinkie before. It was okay.
Yeah, it's very popular in Australia, deep-fried Mars bars.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's, like, a common...
That actually sounds
sugar
delicious.
And fat.
Mm.
Coming
yeah.
out
yeah,
next
it's
on the Food
You've
Network.
Got all your saturated
are we,
fats.
Are we becoming a food channel now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Coming up next, she put smoked salt or Himalayan salt? What else we got to...
So, yes...
Wait, so what kind of burger are you?
Oh, what kind of burger am I? Good point.
You almost tried to get out of it.
Yeah, it's...
I think talking about strange methods of cooking burgers, I think I'm a burger in a pressure cooker. Because a lot of pressure around, a lot of stressed people around me in my flat. And yeah, just generally there's people in very stressed situations. So I feel this try to... What happens if you put a burger in a pressure cooker?
It's probably just going to be really soggy.
Yeah?
I don't know, because it uses, like, moisture. And...
All right, now it's time for our Corona update. See what's happening on the ground with Corona statistics.
Coming to you from the future and the past to the
future, past, and the present. wanted to know what Corona was like
so,
a few days ago. Days of future past.
So as of the 22nd of November, Sunday, there were 172 new infections.
Just
from
in
the
case.
Previous day. And it, the rates per 100,000 people is 130.6 or .6. So, yeah, it's much lower than it was like a few weeks ago. And I think the highest it was 600 people or 600 new infections per day. And I was just like, I don't know. At least it's getting better. It sounds like Hamburg is, it never was the worst, but, you know.
It's may we put a disclaimer of people of the future for today from the past versions of ourselves. November 27th or whatever
day.
Second. This is the people of the future being told by the people of the past for the people of today, which isn't going to be today. It'll be the 27th. We're giving them a disclaimer because in 5 days or so, who knows if the apocalypse third wave is here. So we just want to let you
Hello,
know
people of the
5
future.
Days ago... Or so.
Things looked okay, look, kind
things
of.
Things
great.
Were going down. The chart was going down.
And if
the,
they're
the
still
rate
going,
is
down,
going down,
if the things are still going down.
If it spiked again,
yeah.
We apologize.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
If the spike is back up and it's even worse than before,
so, yeah.
Well, we apologize 5 days in the past for today's future of today. Have a nice life and stay safe, everyone.
Always be hopeful.
Disclaimer.
We were once also hopeful.
We were once also hopeful 5 days ago
so
in the past.
Perhaps.
To tell you in the future, which is today for
stay
yourself.
Stay hopeful. Stay hopeful.
Stay hopeful.
You guys will
and
be
stay
right.
inside. Because yeah. now there's probably...
All right. And we have these new household rule. Well, you know, new rules have come in since we were last on the show. In terms of
which again, by the way,
households, you know, you can only have these two household maximum.
Is it 10 or 15 people?
10.
10. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. 10 people and only two households in any place, wherever you're meeting, outside, inside.
Anywhere. It doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
I think it's just everywhere.
What if you're walking along a street?
I mean, they have to prove that you're like together, right? I mean, you could just. Like, oh, coincidentally, like five households all walking in parallel to each other. Oh, what a coincidence. Yeah. We're all walking
in
the same direction.
I think on Wednesday, so the day the day before this is aired, this episode, they're going to be meeting to discuss whether or not the fixed household rule will
come
be
in
implemented.
As a law.
Yeah.
Because right now it's just a recommendation. They're just floating the idea. The federal government is where you can only choose one household to meet with. So, like, yeah, it just because I think they realize that people are like, you know, on Monday they see one household, Tuesday another household, et cetera, and it's just not great for controlling the numbers and stuff. And people are not really sticking to bubbles as much as they thought.
But do you feel this is too extreme?
It's too fucking
stupid. I think it's extremely... stupid. I think it's going to... I mean, I understand why they're doing it. It's because they're freaking out and they're panicking, especially because Germany did so well before. They're, like, really wanting to stamp the numbers down, especially since the hospitals are starting to get overwhelmed. But I also am personally very much opposed to it because for a lot of people, that's just not practical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and also just forcing people to choose one other friend or one other family to go see for the indefinite future is like pretty much, I don't know. It just sounds horrible. Like, I would rather them just say, no, you can't meet anybody than say you have to choose one of your friends or like a one family member. And I was like talking to people about this, like if you say live in a vague, and, like, each person has a partner that lives in a different household. Do you have to, like, all meet and, like, decide who gets to see their partner the most?
Basically.
And it's just, like, it's nice, I guess, if you're, like, a family who, you know, is like, okay, well, we'll just see, you know, my sister's family or something like this, and we'll hang out, and we're, like, it's going to be a bubble there. But if you're, like, somebody who, you know, lives in a vague, how the fuck are you going to come up with that decision? Especially some of these bigger vacays, like mm-hmm. 9 people. You might as well just see nobody.
Yeah.
Also, how are you going to enforce it?
We're
going to have a fucking registry system? I'm not doing that. I'm sorry. Germany's already had a weird system with this pass. I ain't doing no registry system with them. And on top of that, like, it's just, again, this is my opinion, just from what I've seen anecdotally, like, it's they're skirting around the issues. They're like, for example, I was in Europa Passage, people of the past for today, from the future.
Mm-hmm.
You go to some of these places, easy. Go to Europa Passage, go to these shopping centers. Nobody's following the 1.5 meter rule. There are people who don't even wear the mask properly. They're going into shops. I mean, it's just, they're basically skirting around the idea because they want to protect big businesses first and then putting all the responsibility onto us. And I think people here are already doing their best. And this, what is this? Like this, oh, you have to choose one household only? Get the fuck out of here, okay? Mm. We already admitted we'll close bars. We already closed restaurants. But, like, you're letting these other groups get away with it. And it's, yeah, like, it's still moving up and down quite often.
Like, I just feel like they're getting desperate. I mean, they always have to have an image that they're doing something more and more as the chart goes up. And so they're really getting desperate for what kind of measures they can put in.
Like,
before they indicate some kind of full lockdown situation.
Sure.
Which they want to avoid. Sure, and I think that maybe there's kind of awareness that it's not...
But how are they going to enforce
that? Not, yeah, I think they know it's not enforced. It's kind of like, well, at least it's something kind of attitude.
And also, but I mean, I understand, and I also support a lot of the measures to, like, maintain and mitigate this virus. I'm not in any way supporting any of these nut jobs who are, like, you know, in Leipzig and other places, because they are legitimately nut jobs. And if you're listening to this, you are a fucking nut job. But on top of that, it's like, we also have to be careful, like, because you put these extreme measures in too, like, people are not going to react in that good way. And I don't want to, like, people to end up next political cycle coming in and putting in a bunch of QAnon dipshits who just don't know what the fuck they're talking about, and then their uneducated opinions leading, you know, public health measures. And that's just going to be worse off for us all.
But I lost you there. So wait, you're saying people from that group will get elected?
I'm just worried is that if people view these, like, measures as too extreme, they're going to. I'm worried that they might counter respond and go for people who
vote like half-day or something.
Yeah, people who are like these politicians who say, like, we're not going to do shit. Like, you know what? You're like, fuck it. This is all a hoax. It's bullshit.
You're saying that they're going to alienate people.
Yeah.
Not just alienate people. I think you're going to get a blowback, which could end up costing us more in the long run. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just going to get people, like, this is not a one-to-one comparison, but look in the U.S.
too strong that nobody will want to follow the rules?
No, I'm saying is that
they'll just give up.
The average people who are going to be hit hard on this because they're going to see these measures as extreme, we might get political blowback that we're not paying attention to. It's like, for example, in the U.S., why did people vote for Donald Trump? Probably also as a blowback against neoliberalism, right?
Yeah.
Because they just see this bullshit. I'm not saying it's a one-to-one comparison, but, like, if we don't also think about, like, what the average person is going to be thinking and doing. It's
a protest vote.
It's a protest vote. And people then, look what happened in the U.S. They voted for a dipshit who derailed the country, and now 250,000 plus people are dead. Who knows in Germany if they do put the same version of this guy in power, right? That's the thing. If you're, like, a public health policymaker, maybe, I don't know, a politician, like, you should think about, like, I mean, Germany is good because they're trying to be transparent. They're really trying, which is great. They're not like some other places, they don't fucking communicate anything properly, but... It's good they're being transparent, and I think...
And they always say it's based on science. They always say, oh, it's about the science.
Yeah, and I
feel like from German media, there is still this faith in science rules all.
And it should be.
But I don't know. I mean, some of it is I think there's no real science based on these decisions of this one household rule. Like, no one's had any... controlled trial or study of
the effect. We are the controlled trial. We are the experiment.
So I think they can say science, we need science to a level, but I think wrapping it in this science ball...
Do you know what they do?
It's a bit arbitrary, I think.
They have, like, in the these pandemic models that, like, if you go on, like, you can actually go on to, like, medical journals and other, like, science, like, universities, they'll show it to you how they work.
Yeah, but,
like,
the issue is that you can bring I'm sure this would, like, if everyone followed this, you know, one household rule, it has an effect in this model.
Yeah.
But there's all, like you say, that you have to assume everyone follows the rules and it doesn't lead to everyone giving up on the rules completely and this kind of stuff. And I think that's hard to factor into these models.
Yeah, sure, of
people
course.
Just having this fuck it mentality. Look,
what's the
like
theories?
What happened in that US one where the college kids knew they had COVID and were still going to parties. And they're we didn't consider that in the model.
Exactly.
And
or, like, for example, this one model, like the herd immunity model. It's not working, right? It's not working in Scandinavia. And it's like, now they're like, okay, experiment.
But the Swedes say they were never trying to do the herd immunity thing.
Yeah, they're fucking backstabbing.
But their masks, they're getting, everyone's on the mask train in Sweden
it's
now.
Great.
It's all.
That's good.
Good
it's
job,
it's
Sven.
About fucking time.
Yeah, I know. They finally,
I think it's just they didn't want to admit that they'd
exactly.
fucked up.
They're very
they're
proud.
They're going to say, like, oh, actually, we thought of the mask thing first. It's ours.
Very proud Swedes.
We thought of the mask first.
Yeah, and then they're like, no, actually, we've
always had the mask.
Finally did the the study. We did a thorough study, and we found masks actually work.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yes. Okay, yes. No, bravo.
But, yeah, good for Sweden, maybe.
Better late than never, I guess.
Moving away from Corona slightly. So then we also had this other protests this week, apart from those Berlin, Leipzig. In Hamburg, we had these Sternbrucker protests, or these kind of the walk of shame, they called it.
Yeah.
Which is like anti a lot of the construction happening.
Should we tell the listeners what this is? Sternbrucke, what the whole deal is, really quick.
So Sternbrucke is it's a bridge. So there's a lot of redevelopment happening around the St. Pauli and Altona areas. A lot of housing being developed.
Yeah.
And there's a big bridge called Sternbrucke, which they're planning to redevelop because they're putting in a new S-Bahn line, and they're going to demolish this bridge and all the bars and kind of shops around it, and then put in a gigantic bridge that everyone's calling the Monsterbrücke.
It's ugly as hell, though.
It looks very ugly in the plans.
And it just takes away so much character. Like, that bridge is just such an icon, you know?
Yeah.
It's monumental.
Yeah.
To Shenzhen.
It looks rough. Yeah. It looks, like, rickety, and, like, it's always leaking water, but that, like, captures some... It has personality.
Character. It has character.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm actually pretty upset about it, too. Not enough to, like, protest, but it's just, like, come on, guys.
It's not just also the bridge that they're protesting. They're also discussing, because on that street, Stresemannstrasse is also... So, currently, I think there's, like, four lanes total? Maybe two lanes total or something? Actually, yeah, it's two lanes at the moment.
Two lanes in each direction?
Two lanes, yeah, I think I think, if I'm not mistaken. But basically, the Sternbrücke is not just about the bridge, but also that entire street has been... they want to basically expand it and destroy, like, make it four lanes, I think, on each side. They basically want to make it into a huge fucking street. And the thing that they have to do is they have to destroy a bunch... Like, and that street is very long. It's very long, goes all the way to, I think, the Badenfeld and everything. And the thing is, they want to, from what I read and understood, is that they're going to destroy all those buildings along that street. They're going to destroy all these like trees which have been in the area for so long. They're going to destroy all this like nature and existing older Altbaus and just put roads. And the irony is that they've been called out because currently I think Hamburg is run by the Green and SPDs. So the irony is that
it's been for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And so this supposed, you know, environmental city is. You know, the solution is we should build more roads, knowing that time and time again, you know, car ownership is not really going to be the thing of the future for a lot of people in the city.
I mean, this is why, I mean, I think that they think they have a chance with these protests because, you know, there's so much green power in the Green Party now, and so they're pushing them to, stand up more against sort of SPD plans and everything. So, all right. We will come back in a second and talk about the U.S. election. It's the other big news of the week, but for now,
let's go into the dark age.
MGMT in a little dark age.
Find it hard, and the engine's
So welcome back to Ich bin ein Hamburger, 93.0 FSK. So now we're going to talk about the other big news issue of the week, which is, of course, Biden being declared the president-elect of the United States. And we're joined now by Astrid. So Astrid is a U.S. citizen that's also heavily involved with U.S. politics. Hi, Astrid. How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
She's joining us.
How are you guys?
Good, good, good.
We're all good. Thank you.
Joining us live from the Stone-Schanze area. I believe that's where you are now, right, Astrid?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So she's on the ground. So she also lives here in Hamburg, but you were involved. So how were you kind of involved in the recent elections? You're a volunteer for the Democratic Party, I understand.
It was called Flip the West. They're a pretty big PAC, and they are a Democratic. They follow the Democratic ideology of the states, but I wouldn't say that they're really part of the Democratic Party. So
okay. I see.
Yeah, so I was actually involved with being an intern, and the goal of this organization was to flip the Senate. Mm-hmm. So because there were so many other organizations that were working on particularly voter turnout, we were also doing voter turnout, but for the senators and for Democratic senators.
Mm-hmm. I see. Yeah.
I see. And what was your reaction to the results? Was that kind of what you were kind of expecting, or were you surprised how close it was in the end?
So I was a bit surprised, and then I was not a bit surprised, because for like 3 months prior, tons of podcasts, all the news anchors were talking about the fact that because so many people vote Democratic by mail, that this was inevitable, that the votes of Democrats were going to come later. And the thing was, we weren't very surprised about the result necessarily. It was more the surprise that, unfortunately, the states that we were working on, which was, well, Colorado and Arizona flipped blue. But then it was Kansas, Iowa, that we were heavily focusing on to flip blue, that unfortunately they didn't flip blue. So that wasn't as surprising.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely, like, I was happy with the election results, like so many people. But I think now I've just been getting so many emails to help out with the elections, the runoff elections in Georgia.
That yeah, will right.
I've heard those are a big, big deal.
I'm, yeah, they're huge.
Yeah. So
I mean, I was in the South during the time right before the elections. Like, my mother lives in Atlanta, Georgia. So I was there seeing so many local churches and so many conventions, like, kind of open for people to now vote. And there was just lines. So I've never seen that in my lifetime, actual lines to vote that long, even mm-hmm. in very, like, small, small little towns right outside of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So it was, you can tell that the mood was weird. The mood was intense. But I think what's happening right now in Atlanta speaks a lot about, like, what's the demographic change in Texas and Atlanta
mm-hmm.
and in the South, because there's so much blue actually there.
Yeah. And wasn't it the district that was, like, played a huge contributing factor in winning Georgia, John Lewis's old district, like, before he
yes.
passed away? Which is, like, kind of, yeah, I don't know. I'm sure he would be proud if he could see that happen.
He was proud, but it was definitely Miss Abrams who mm-hmm. technically lost the governor's seat prior to that. And okay. because of her work, about for 2 years, she focused on so much voter outreach. She signed up, I believe, what was it, over 80? They got 80,000 new voters to go to the booths, first-time voters. So she worked really hard in Georgia to get people out there. So I think John Lewis is just, I think, this icon that shows you how important voting is. And then you had a lot of organizations, a lot of people that were really pushing. And even right now, there was South Carolina, or which is it North or South Carolina, that what is that senator? Lindsey Graham.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he had a really, really close race, and he got super lucky. He kept on his seat. But what that money did right now was it created, like, the platform for now it to become blue, because he is so close. Give him a few more years, and I think in the next election run that he will definitely lose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what, like, people are seeing right now. They're seeing that it's going to be really hard for, like, Kansas and Iowa to actually turn blue. And I think now they're focusing still so much on Texas, keeping Georgia, like, a solid blue, or at least a purple. Then you have the South Carolina that can actually be blue, but that's going to take time.
Well, then, so I think, wasn't it both the Carolinas went to Trump? Or
yes.
I think
yes.
in okay, the end they both went,
okay.
yeah.
I knew North Carolina.
It was close,
sure,
but in
South
the
Carolina.
End they both went to Trump, yeah. yeah. But then with the Senate runoff, so the Democrats will get control of the Senate, right? If they win
Georgia
Senate seats.
We'll see.
And you think that's pretty likely, Astrid, or you, I don't know.
I think right now, like, Georgia is such a big state. Like, they have so many people working in Georgia. The organization that I interned at, they're working on that right now with other organizations. That we just do tons of calling, that we do so much emailing. We'll see what happens. And because of the fact that we're supposed to have a vaccine, or people are supposed to be vaccinated, I think within the next month, you don't know if that will push people actually to go to the polls now, or maybe there's gonna already be door-to-door volunteering in Georgia. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that shifts. I think one of the biggest challenges that during my time, I did everything virtual with everybody. We made virtual handouts. We did virtual signs because we really were trying to use social media. Because, you know, like the law signs people put in front of those houses, well, because no one can see those law signs really because no one can go outside. we were doing virtual lawn signs, like, here, put this as your Instagram post, or here is one specifically detailing like how it fits like Facebook. So we did a lot of like social media outreach.
And you, yeah. And I'm guessing there'll still be the same mail-in voting for the Senate runoff as well in Georgia. So
They already started doing that, I think, a week after the election. Mm-hmm. They were already urging people in Georgia to start getting your mail-in ballots for January. So they already knew that it was going to come that way. Yeah. And I think Georgia could go blue, but I mean, it's going to be a lot of work because that means now everybody, it's not, you know, that was one of the problems that they were saying, that you had so many people just focusing on the presidency. Okay, the presidency is really important. And then everyone knew that the Senate was so important, but you didn't have, I think, enough organizations, even our organization had talked about it, like enough organizations really detailing what goes down the ballot rather than just the president. So I think that's what we're seeing in January. It's this discussion that we need to do a better job as volunteers and our organizations that really talk about the ballot. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think this was just a challenging time because everyone hates getting phone calls. I got cursed out so many times in Iowa and Kansas. Oof. Like, you know, I can't blame them. They're getting, you know, they're getting bombarded, Democrat, Republican, they're getting bombarded with calls all day long, emails all day long. So of course they're angry because they don't want to be a swing state. I think most people don't want to be a swing state. They don't understand the power of a swing state. And we'll see what happens in January. But that was my take on the election.
You're just constantly being like courted by both parties, and like, I don't know. It must be so tense in those areas because like where I grew up, it just, you know, if you were a Trump supporter, you kept it quiet. Right. So, I mean, like, just having both elements so, I guess, present must be, I guess, stressful. But maybe you get used to it.
But you feel more important, right? If you're in one of these swing states, you feel like your vote matters.
Yeah, they're always trying to move you. More so than,
like, in California or whatever. But I feel like I prefer to be in a swing state than a...
No, I mean, like, you definitely... have to, they definitely need to have their needs met, because I feel like, wasn't it like, I read something that said like the reason Trump lost Wisconsin was because he just like completely neglected them and like didn't help like any sort of business or like help these towns which are really struggling and things like this. I'm not sure, but
The thing is, the majority of Republicans that I talked to in Wisconsin, I feel really bad for them in a way, because many of them that believe in the ideology of Republicanism, they don't like how the Republican Party now it's all about race, you know, and now people are very uncomfortable with that. And many of the Republicans that I talked to in Wisconsin that said that I'm going to vote for Biden, you know, they didn't sound happy about that, because it's the fact that they're a Republican. There you have these people saying, you know, my family's been Republican for 50, 40 years, but now we're still Republican, but this is not what we want the party to look like. And the thing is, it's so hard to... And if people are becoming more educated about the fact that, okay, maybe I can vote for the president and then I vote for a red Republican, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think there would have to be more studies on that in Wisconsin. I met a lot of people that were actually quite blue. And the Republicans that were going blue was just only because of the fact that they don't like the face of the party.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it isn't as much that they feel like they're being left behind. I mean, I guess it depends from state to state. I mean, I don't know. Like, Nevada, which went to Biden, had the highest unemployment rate, like 30% unemployment rate during COVID, and they just got so just thrown under the bus, and, like, very little was done by the federal government to help them. So I think that has a contributing factor, but maybe it is more like what you're saying.
Yeah, I think, well, what was it? Like, he wasn't really campaigning that much in Wisconsin. So that maybe was a big hit to him. He wasn't campaigning that much in Pennsylvania either, and later on he did. And I think that's just a big thing, is just, like, how much they put into campaigning. How much do they maintain? I mean, if you look back at Hillary, you know, that was a big problem. Like, her campaign was strong, but it was also strategic. She didn't really campaign in areas that they said was needed.
Yeah.
And that's what I think happened to Trump,
too. It's a huge oversight, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And going back to the, like, bringing up this kind of race kind of issue, I mean, it was kind of publicized, this split in the kind of some states where Latino vote shifted more Biden, other states where it went to Trump. Do you feel like that, the way it was presented in the media, that was accurate from...
No, because no? Everyone, every Latino community was quite... One, they were happy that when you talk about the Latino community, you have, like, you know, that they were like, we're not a monolith. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to have Latinos that vote this way. They're going to have a mixture of it because we are mixed people in general. And absolutely. What happened in Guatemala is not the same as what happened in Venezuela. What happened in Colombia is not the same as what happens in Chile. And you're going to see this change and ideology change. And that's something, I don't know what's going to happen with the Latin vote. I'm always scared that look at Texas. A lot of people that voted in Texas that were Latino that went to Trump and who were Mexican American, generations of Mexican American. Now, part of me, of course, I think that's really crazy. How can you ever vote for somebody that disregarded our heritage or called our people disgusting? And that's something to be worried about in the future with the Latin community as a whole and separately, because of the fact that I think that they were saying Biden needs to do better. And that's one thing that I think the Latin community really liked Bernie, because he was always trying to get the Latin community to become stronger, because I think you have African-American population and right under is the Latin population. It's like that sleeping giant. And that's like the thing that, I think the Democratic Party has to do better at. And also, I think Sherman and I talked about it before, reaching out to those that have a background, like a Middle Eastern background, that the Democratic Party needs to be more open with that as well, to get rid of like the stigma that we still have from even prior to 9/11.
What do you think, what steps do you think Biden can take to do that? Like, assuming they do get control of the Senate, I mean, what solid policies do you think, or is it just a kind of,
no,
it's giving them a voice, doing this whole kind of, making these issues more out in the open? Or do you think there's like proper policy steps that would kind of attract that vote kind of thing?
I think both, because, so sorry for cutting off earlier. So both, because one, you need people out there speaking about it. I don't always believe in mirror representation, but you need some form of representation. And another problem is policy. One shoe doesn't fit at all.
Right.
Right. So that was one problem. So if you ever look back, like, I'm a firm believer of affirmative action, but also looking at what affirmative action had did to, say, the institutions regarding Native Americans, because they're about, oh, everyone's supposed to be equal. They used that, what was pertained to the Black community usually, and they used that against, like, Native Americans, in the States, and they used it in like the First Nations, even in Canada. They kind of took that reasoning and was like, oh, we can disregard and say you cannot build your institutions because we're all the same. And that's a problem, that you can use policy and twist it around. And it's just like, okay, no, there has to be unfortunately specific policies to specific communities, because then if you're saying, oh, this one policy fits all minorities, again, you're disregarding the fact that minorities have all different identities and backgrounds. Again, you put us in one cup when we are so many more cups.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. I mean, would you say, I mean, can you imagine a future in the US where Congress has a lot more diverse representation in terms of ethnic background? Do you think this would help, or do you think that's just kind of token representation? Or do you think, can you imagine that happening in the future?
Yeah, I think we're going to have more people of a diverse background in Congress for sure. I think that, but I also believe, like, just because they look diverse, are they really thinking diversely? Because you can look at the Latinos that are in the Republican Party, they're Latino.
You have
pure Cubans in there, and they are so against sometimes the Latin community as well. They're so against what it took to be an immigrant, what it took to develop their family. So I think physically, yeah, we're going to become more diverse, but we got to also go behind the mind and understand what is it that are they actually diverse? Because for me, so many Cuban Americans that I met are not different from those kids that I met from, I don't know, some rich place, unfortunately, a white background. And so it's kind of like, they weren't different. They didn't have different ideologies. And just because you may look different, just because you could speak two languages, you might not be different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's like, think about the new Supreme Court justice who, like, is meant to replace RBG and, like, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And she is, like, super conservative, like, anti-abortion, all this other stuff, like anti-feminist basically, but they're like, oh, see, she's a woman, so, like, you know, we'll have a female voice in the room, but it's, you know, she is not for women, and it's just, it's like actually really, really distressing that they just say, oh, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a woman, so, you know, we just have another woman on there to balance out the numbers, I guess.
Representation, and okay, just because you look and sound like a woman or whatever that means, you don't represent women interests. And that's what I mean. Just because we have a Congress that looks like us, do you actually represent the difference of us?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this other divide is this urban-rural divide. Do you think this is increasing, this kind of polarization between urban and rural areas will keep going in future elections? And that, or do you think there's potential for this having not so much polarization in the U.S. political system now that Biden's elected? This is a big question, I know, but just your take on it. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not really sure about that. Like, I think rural and, like, you know, metro areas, they're very different people, respectively. And I don't know what that means because, like I said, when I was calling people in Montana, I mean, this is like the rural areas, and there was actually so much blue there too. And we'll see. I mean, just because you're in the country and you're saying, yeah, maybe you're from like deep in Atlanta, doesn't mean that you don't have the same interests. But we'll see if what are those interests as a country, right? That we want to go forward with. And that, I think, is going to take us time to see that. And we don't know. That's very far in the future that I have no idea.
I mean, were you surprised by attitude when you would call these communities in Montana or these rural communities? Were you kind of, do you feel like they were very open about the attitudes, or do you feel there was this, I don't know, silence about not wanting to say who they're supporting or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Really? I got so many people that were Republicans that didn't want to say that they were Republican. And then because of that, I think they're scared of the stigma that it has now looked at as a racist party.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was always surprised when someone was like, yeah, I want to vote for Biden. I want to vote for this senator in the Democratic Party. I was always surprised and happy. And, you know, that's what I mean. Like, there's actually a lot of blue out there. It's like, I had this one guy tell me, he's like, yeah, there's a few blue people here in Montana. We're just in a sea of red. I know we're in a sea of red, but there's still blue here.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, there's blue everywhere. There's red everywhere. And I also hate the fact that we use colors that way, because there's people that's what they were saying, that they're not blue or red. Yeah. They're right in between, but they'll lean towards those ways just because maybe it speaks to their interests more. But I really don't think the colors help at all. I think the colors are just a mess.
Yeah,
the whole two-party system is causing a lot of the issues that we're seeing guess we're just gonna take a complete overhaul to fix it, and like our institutions are built up this way.
And I'm very excited the fact that Puerto Rico voted to become a statehood. I am scared for them, but I'm happy for them. That was the people decided that.
It was a referendum, right?
I mean, it will depend on Congress how they want to move forward with that. But I'm so happy in a way that they decided that. You know, it wasn't the United States saying, hey, you're going to become a state, or you're never going to become a state. Like, they were saying, like, yo, we're open to statehood.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing that people don't understand. Like, them opening themselves as a state, they will allow now Americans, you know, in the mainland, could come to Puerto Rico and change the culture of Puerto Rico. So it wasn't a little thing. It was a big thing. The fact that they're saying that they want to be statehood, they do. I am so scared, but they do risk the fact that they may not be able to speak Spanish. They're going to, I think, keep the, I think they're going to keep their, of course, their culture alive. But of course, this was like something that people don't understand. Like, why is it such a big thing?
You think they're not going to be able to speak Spanish? We don't even have an official language. And you know, there's so many places in LA that don't even need to speak English, which is great. Like, go to like.
No, but this is the thing. We, in the United States, in our Constitution, we don't have an official language recognized. Yes, that is true. And by law, that is true. But you can tell, Shervin, and all of us that speak a different language, what is the main language of the country? It is English. Look at our courts. Yeah, look at our administrations. So it will be English. It will be implemented. And if that is forced on Puerto Ricans, they lose the risk. They have the risk of losing Spanish. I don't think that will really happen. I mean, that will take generations.
Yeah,
but this is what I mean. It's so serious when people want to become a statehood. They lose the risk of losing even their culture.
Yeah, and you're right.
You can also look at what happened to Hawaii. They became a statehood. Do we speak any native Hawaiian languages? No. Who are the ones in Hawaii doing the worst? Oh, that's right. Native Hawaiians.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's a big, big deal. And I'm excited to see what happens with Puerto Rico, how they're going to decide it. Because the only reason, of course, why they wanted to become statehood is because they need to have a stronger say in those national policies that we decide in this main country that always affects them and they don't have any say in it.
And I guess it affects entitlement to sort of federal benefits and federal money and things like that.
Does it? Yeah, it's so complicated. It's also, it's very fun to talk about, but it's also so like frustrating because it's also complicated.
Yeah, I see. And just so in terms of the US's place in the wider world now, I mean, now that Biden's been elected, do you feel like you're, this goes to all of you, you feel like, oh, I can be proud to be an American again?
Not necessarily proud, but less ashamed for me.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, we just fucked it up so badly the first time that it was just like, people would be coming up to me just like, so what the hell happened, Maria? It's like, I thought I knew my country. And I still like to, you know, obviously 49% of the popular vote Trump took, but like, at least we were able to turn that around a bit. Because, I mean, he in terms of the Electoral College, he did, like, win by a landslide, but not by the popular vote. And I don't know.
The same score, right? They flipped it completely. Like, I think Trump got the same exact number as Biden got. Or Trump in 2016.
Yeah.
I was here in Europe during the Bush era. And let me tell you, being American during the Bush era was not... I was in Scandinavia, too. And let me tell you this, running into refugees from Iraq and Afghanistan, because my family helps them, right? And also I interact with a lot of them. It was not a very popular thing to be. It was not a very enjoyable thing to be. People gave you shit, and rightfully so. But at the same time,
gave you shit personally. That's not your fault.
Yeah, sure. But I can sense, like, the animosity they felt for, like, hey, like I mean, also, it was just not a very popular thing to be. But it's very interesting because I never saw that same resentment pushed towards the British, given how much the UK is so heavily involved in Iraq and Afghanistan.
And Australia as well.
It's like returning back into the era of Obama. Once Obama, I was also doing it, like, once it became back into Obama, it was like, oh, great. Like, you guys are, it's cool now to be back into it. And I'm like, okay, like.
So as soon as Obama got elected, you got a lot less.
I got a lot less flack, but also, I mean, my situation with being an American in Europe is not the same because I'm not white. So, I'm coming from a Near East, as the Germans call it, Iranian background. So, Europe's viewpoint with Middle Easterners and Americanism is complete. Most Germans are fine with it, but for example, like, it's different. Like, I go to a bakery and like. I guess shit. I get rejected my American identity, like quite often. So and it's because they view it as like, oh, but you're Iranian first, or you're this first, and you're that first. Which I don't give a shit anymore. I mean, I just tell people to go fuck yourself, and I move on. But do I feel like I'm any better or what? I don't give a fuck, to be honest. Okay. I just did what it is. It's probably gonna be better for most new arrival Americans who are coming to Europe. You're gonna be treated a lot better, but. Again, it depends on your skin color and where, if you're coming from certain regions of the world. That's really it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't say I feel any less or any more. I've always considered myself Mexican-American. Historically, that is my title, and that's something I'm proud of. I'm happy that I've contained both of my cultures. I don't know. I don't know if this makes me feel happier to be an American. Not really. I'm more just like, okay, I think we're developing. Like any country, we're developing. I'm proud that we're talking about these conversations that need to happen. That's good. That's how you develop. I'm proud of that. And that's about probably it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've learned a lot about my country since, Trump became elected. Like I feel like I had some sort of like a vision in my head of what America was like, and then it just got completely turned on its head, and it was a very rude awakening, but like, yeah, in the end it was an educational experience, and like, hopefully we can move on from that.
It's this Wizard of Oz moment, right? Like, pulling back the curtain to all the stuff that's happening behind the scenes, all the dirtiness.
If you're non-white, you knew that always existed.
Yeah, but that's what I mean.
For a lot of white America, this is an awakening.
Revealing for it to non-whites, the rest of the world.
Also, someone who's from, like, a very, like, San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah, yeah.
The Bay Area bubble.
There's, like, Trump voters there, and, like, openly racist people, but
it's not the
not
same.
As bad as the place where you grew up. So no, I just like I saw a different side of the same country as you did.
I have black friends back home, Hispanic friends. Like it's just like you can see there's like a we live in two different realities. It's not I'm not like also shaming anybody to like say like oh like obviously we experience it much. No, I'm just like it's like I'm happy actually people are awakening because like this racism for example like it's hilarious. We're talking about the Republican Party being like. I can't believe it's a racist party. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? This has been a racist party for fucking ever. Yeah. Like, this is new? During the Bush era, this was fucking there. You guys had no problem preaching killing Muslims abroad. You had no fucking problem making pop culture references to killing fucking Muslims and brown people. How many times I listen to Republican senators and House people say, oh, you know what, we should make the fucking the Middle East turn into a glass. Referencing that we should fucking nuke them. Are you fucking kidding me? This is not new. Trump is just a byproduct of the Republican Party itself. It's a byproduct of an America that's been shattered for so long. A fucking war-driven people. This has always been there. This has always been there. And this is, now we're reaching pivotal points now that the fucking, the pressure cooker's at the end now. Everything's exploding. 70 million Americans are racist? You bet your fucking ass they got racism in them. You bet your fucking ass white supremacy is normalized for them. That's normal for them. It's not normal for the rest of us. I'm glad there's more of us than them now, but this has always been there. And I'm glad that states like Texas, Georgia, some of these southern states, it's flipping. Things are changing, which is a good sign. I'll tell you this. From 9/11 to now, shit, things got better. They have gotten much better.
Yeah.
They have. But we're not there yet. And those old guards and those old remnants of this race, it's still there. And this war... This is just the beginning. This is just the beginning. We're in the fucking long haul for this. This ain't gonna end anytime soon. That's just my two cents.
No, that's an important thing to say because it's also like you mentioning all this, like almost like street talk, but also street talk that we saw formally being given on the TV. You know, I think now we're demanding more transparency as well. Mm. I think before there was not transparency, people were not awake and understanding. And the States is in a way very isolated, unlike Europe, right? So this didn't help either.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's good that we're talking more globally, even though we're talking domestically, we're trying to get more of a global sense, and I think we're demanding more transparency, which we should, out of our government. That is a democratic good that we need to have from the government.
And I still, in a really big picture, I still think it's such a good stress test of, you know, U.S. constitutional democracy, because, I mean, Trump is trying as hard as possible to break the entire system. Like, he's taking it to the limit. So if the fact that it's withstanding this so far, I think at least is a good sign for this model, if it's being adopted elsewhere, although of course it has its problems, but at least it hasn't collapsed, which I think is still something positive.
Yeah.
And I think, The collective,
it's exposed a lot of the weaknesses.
And I was going to say, I think like it's very weird because our institutions are very color neutral, you know, even though we have these policies that are made from the government that are so formed to color. And
you mean by the parties?
Not just parties, like policies as well, okay. That be local policies that become around color. And I think it's interesting to see that our institutions are pretty good because they were made neutral, even though from very racist people. And to me, it's like a hypocrisy. It was like, ha, you didn't get that far.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you so much, Astrid, for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
It was really nice to discuss this and get your insights.
We hope we'll have you.
Fun time being on the radio for the first time.
Yay!
We hope you join us again soon, for sure.
Sounds good.
Yeah, all right.
All right.
Well, thank you guys. See you soon.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
See you.
Bye, Astrid. All right. That's it for this week's show. Thanks, everyone, for listening to HB9 Hamburger FSK. We'll see you
next month
for our separate special Christmas show.
Yep, all right.
Have a good month and stay safe.
Tell you what it means. Pressure!